Welcome back to Legal Eagle on West Kent Radio, where Berry & Lambert's partner and head of private client David Lee is explaining the legalities of discretionary trusts. So David, what are the advantages?
So there are several advantages of using trusts. There are pros and cons to these type of structures. One of the main advantages is the flexibility it provides the trustees when administering the assets. So in terms of the trust funds, that can include, for example, property or savings and investments. But generally, there is the ability for the trustees to adapt to changing circumstances. So if a beneficiary needs money for their education or for a deposit for a house, for example, they can make a request to the trustees, and potentially funds can be advanced, provided the trustees are in agreement, either from capital or income. The other great thing is the protection they provide. So, as I said earlier, it ring fences assets. It keeps them shielded from creditors, from divorce, from spendthrift children. So, again, if someone gets into financial difficulty, although their own assets can be assessed, the money in the trust fund is protected ultimately. And then you have the tax planning element of it. If enough time is taken, if people set up these trusts during their lifetime, and provided they survive 7 years and they're not named as a beneficiary, it drops outside their estate for inheritance tax purposes, so it's not charged at the 40%. There can be other charges, but at least it's no longer under that regime. So advice should always be taken on that point, but there can be tax planning advantages in setting these up.
So we'll go more into the tax element later on, but what are the disadvantages?
The disadvantages, I suppose you have the cost of setting up the trust initially. That might be the legal fees, the taxation advice that needs to be taken. There's a degree of administration involved. The trust would need to be registered with HMRC's Trust Registration Service, or collectively called the TRS. And then you have the ongoing administration of running a discretionary trust. So ideally, you should have regular trustee meetings at least every couple of years to discuss the trust and how it's being administered, how it's invested. You might well have meetings with financial advisors regarding the investments. There will almost certainly need to be tax returns filed with HMRC if the trust generates income or capital gains. So that all needs to be factored in. And sometimes when we explain that to clients, they decide, well, actually, I'd rather keep things more simple. But certainly, in terms of the protection it can provide, it is worth it for a lot of people we meet.
So now on to the dreaded tax. How are these trusts taxed?
So for inheritance tax, but if you set up a lifetime discretionary trust, if you put in more than £325,000 worth of assets, that could be property or savings, then you would pay what's called an entry charge of 20% above the nil rate band of £325,000. So by way of example, if you were to put in £350,000, that would be 20% of £25,000. But if it's less than £325,000, you don't pay that setup charge. Every 10 years, you also pay an anniversary charge, and that's a maximum of 6% above the what's called the nil rate band. So again, if the trust fund is worth £400,000 at the 10-year anniversary, that would be 6% of £75,000, which is £4,500. So there is these ongoing costs to bear in mind. There are quite high rates of income tax as well if you have a discretionary trust, if that trust generates dividends or interest. And then again, if you sell capital assets, be it shares or investments, there can be capital gains tax to pay. So they're the three main ones. Potentially stamp duty, which obviously has come into the press recently. We'd always say to take advice from an accountant or a stamp duty specialist on that point. So they are the four main taxes that you deal with. But the benefit of it, although you have those anniversary charges for inheritance tax, provided you survive 7 years and you're not named as a beneficiary, nor is your spouse, you don't pay the 40% that you would do if it was still in your estate, provided you survive the 7 years. So you have this ongoing 6% every 10 years, but that could be more palatable than the 40%.
So with that in mind, with the costs, are they actually just trusts only for the wealthy?
No. I think that's one of the misconceptions. I think a lot of people do think that. It can be for wealth of all different levels. So again, grandparents may want to set up some money for their grandchildren, and again, that doesn't have to be a huge amount. You could have people with disabled children who might need to set up a trust fund, for example. There's a plethora of different reasons why you would do. Certainly, we do get some requests from more wealthy clients, but by the same token, there are other reasons why people would look to want to try to preserve their assets, and you don't necessarily have to be of huge wealth to do that. So I think advice should always be taken in deciding whether or not it's appropriate.
So we've obviously heard about that in the news recently. So why are discretionary trusts used for parents with disabled children?
Yeah, I mean, I touched on this a bit in the first segment, but essentially, if you have a disabled child who is in receipt of means-tested benefits, if you make a simple will leaving everything to your children, that person, firstly, they're unlikely to be able to, or they may not be able to manage that money, so it would be better to be held by the trustees on their behalf, but it also would affect their entitlement, because they would then, if the money was paid directly to them, they would then have to declare that as part of their capital and their income. So that can affect future benefits moving forward. So for those people, it's definitely something to bear in mind. It's sort of beyond the scope of this discussion, but there is another form of trust called a disabled persons trust, in which the taxation is slightly different to a discretionary trust. And there's, again, there's pros and cons to both those structures. So there are always reasons why it may well be a particularly useful structure to have in place if you do have disabled children.
So it is a complex issue, obviously. So should professional advice be sought if you are considering setting one up?
Yes, so I do think that I know that sometimes people draw up their own wills and they do probate themselves, but I think the trust is such a wide variety. So many different types of trust, different taxation with different trusts involved, and different implications, and there can be, if you try to do this yourself, can end up causing problems down the line. So even if it is just an initial fixed fee meeting, I certainly think it would be worth taking advice.
So if someone's listening and they are interested in this, what should their next step be?
I think the next step, if it's something you are interested in, by all means book an appointment, and we'd be happy to assist. We have solicitors across the department who can assist with that. Even if you live outside of the area, a local solicitor to you, it's worth taking advice, and also with your accountant if there is capital gains or stamp duty implications. But I think it's something whereby it is really important to take advice first, and then moving forward, you can, the next steps can be explained to you if you want to proceed with that.
Thank you so much, David. So some much needed clarity on a topical issue. You can listen to the full episode on the West Kent Radio website and contact the team at berryandlamberts.co.uk for more information. David is back in the hot seat next month to cover the subject of life interest trusts. So do join us then on West Kent Radio's Legal Eagle.